For more presentations like this, visit www.xenos.org.
All right, let's get started. Come on in, grab a seat. We got plenty of room up here, this whole general area right there. Servanteam meeting. We got some stuff lined up for you this morning. I'm going to be sharing some thoughts on prayer here. And then we're going to have Gary and a number of different speakers come up here and share with you about some of the awesome stuff going on in our fellowship. Just thought it'd be a good morning for some encouragement and some perspective, right? Outside of maybe our own little corner of the church. So why don't I just throw up a word of prayer for us before we get started. Father, it's always awesome to get together with fellow co-laborers like this. Just reflect on how you are the one that fuels the ministry in this church, God. That we're so grateful that you choose to use people like us and that we get to do it together. And I just ask, God, that as we spend some time reflecting on the role that prayer plays in our ministry, that you would really help us see how we can utilize this awesome tool more effectively in our ministry. And I pray too just for later this morning as we see how your spirit is moving in this church at large, God, just help us to walk away with a sense of edification and encouragement, knowing that we're not here laboring every week by ourselves or on our own, God, but it's with the power of your spirit. Amen. So I'm just going to say a few words here about prayer as a means of ministry. I think we think about prayer a lot of times as a means of growth, as we should, right? I mean, it'd be very difficult to have any sort of meaningful relationship with the Lord if we weren't personally talking with him. But it's more than that. Prayer is more than that. It's more than just something for our personal devotional life. This is actually a crucial tool when it comes to our ministry. Halsby, because we really can't talk about prayer without talking about Halsby, at least I can't, in his book Prayer says, there are no doubt many believers who have not given much attention to prayer as work. Prayer is looked upon mainly as a means of sustaining our life and God from day to day. Only the spirit of prayer can teach us to labor in prayer, to employ prayer as a means of doing spiritual work. Is that the way that you think about prayer? That's actually me serving and ministering to the people that God's brought me to lead? Do I have that kind of perspective? That's what we want to be thinking about this morning. That maybe prayer is more than just something for my personal devotional, my inner life with the Lord. Certainly it's that. Okay, we're not trying to say that's not important. But I really want us to get outside of that and see this as part of our responsibility as leaders, right? In Acts 6:4, we see that the apostles delegated other responsibilities so that they could do two things. Two things that as leaders was so important that they devote themselves to, right? One, ministry of the word. Can you imagine trying to have a spiritual impact in people's lives without the power of God's word? No. Can you imagine? How would you bring people to a knowledge of Christ? How would you train them as workers? How would you equip them? How could we do what we do without the power of God's word? Do you have the same perspective on prayer? That doing our job as leaders would be impossible without the power of prayer? That's what the apostles felt like. They're like, man, we got to focus on these two things. And we should feel that way too. And I think we're pretty strong here in this fellowship when it comes to the ministry of the word. We believe in that. I feel like that's a strong ethos. Do we have that same commitment, that same resolve, that prayer is just as vital a part of our ministry? That's what we want to think about. And we're going to be looking at this from lessons that come up in this situation in Acts 12 and what we can glean about prayer as a tool of ministry from this section of Acts. So here we go. About that time, King Herod Agrippa began to persecute some believers in the church. He had the apostle James, John's brother, killed with the sword. That's a pretty big bummer. Okay? We got James, one of the 12, gone. This early on in church history. I mean, and the development of the church, pretty sure they took that kind of hard. That would have been demoralizing. And Herod's like, wow, this is pleasing all the Jewish people. So he also arrested Peter, and this took place over the Passover celebration. So this is real bad. They've killed James, and now he's arrested Peter with the intent to do the same. Man, this is a crisis. They're going to lose their main guy. You can just imagine. I mean, you think about what, I don't know if you've ever had this experience about how you all show up for a meeting. You guys are probably way more organized than we are over in our neck of the woods. And you realize nobody has prepared a teaching. Everybody thought you were going to do it or they were going to do it. And you think about that feeling of panic that arises when you realize who is going to do this. Imagine a situation like this, right? Imagine the panic, just the complete, it's all going to go to hell, right? What are we going to do? And so he's imprisoned him, placing him under the guard of four squads of four soldiers each, right? Because at this point in the book of Acts, Peter kind of has a reputation for breaking out of prison miraculously. Herod intended to bring Peter out for public trial after the Passover, right? Going to wait till after the holiday weekend and we'll get the job done. But while Peter was in prison, the church prayed very earnestly for him. You think about this picture here. Put yourself in the shoes of this early church. They've killed James. They've got our main leader. They've got Peter. What are we going to do? We're up against the government. We're up against, the political power, the military power. What can we do? We can pray. What were they going to turn to? What weapon did they have? They had prayer. John Stott says this. He says, here then were two communities, the world and the church, arrayed against one another, each wielding an appropriate weapon. On the one side was the authority of Herod, the power of the sword, and the security of the prison. On the other side, the church turned to prayer, which is the only power which the powerless possess. What do you turn to in those moments of crisis? I think a lot of times we think prayer can wait. We've got to do something, right? And here, doing something was praying. This is what they could do. This was the weapon, as Stott puts it, the only power which the powerless possess. And a lot of times in Christian ministry, we're all too familiar with how powerless we are. Because what we're trying to do is something impossible. It's not difficult, it's impossible for fallen, wicked human beings like us to have any kind of spiritual impact. That's a supernatural thing. And it's going to take a supernatural power for us to have any kind of success in that. The power for us to really minister to people with that transforming power of God is going to come from prayer. This is the tool that God has given us to carry out the job that he's given us. Chuck Smith, in his book Effective Prayer Life, says this: more victories are wrought through prayer than any other means. It's shocking that though God has given us such a powerful weapon, we are defeated again and again. The problem is, though we possess the weapon, we seldom use it. Don't talk about prayer. Pray.
Use the weapons that God has given you. And so what does that look like? What does it look like for us? What are some principles that we can apply? Well, we're going to finish reading our story here and try and glean some of that from this section of Acts 12. What are some things about prayer, maybe in my mindset, in my outlook, that can help me apply prayer as a weapon, as a ministry tool? Okay, so let's see what happens here. The night before Herod was to bring him to trial, Peter was sleeping between two soldiers, bound with two chains, and sentries stood guard at the entrance. So they're like, got this guy on lockdown. He is not breaking out again. Suddenly, an angel of the Lord appeared, and a light shone in the cell. He struck Peter on the side and woke him up. Quick, get up, he said, and the chains fell off Peter's wrists. Then the angel said to him, put on your clothes and sandals. And Peter did so. Wrap your cloak around you and follow me, the angel told him. Peter followed him out of the prison, but he had no idea that what the angel was doing was really happening. He thought he was seeing a vision, so he thinks this is all a dream. They passed at first the first and second guards and came to the iron gate leading to the city. It opened for them by itself, and they went through it. When they had walked the length of one street, suddenly the angel left him. Then Peter came to himself and said, now I know without a doubt that the Lord sent his angel and rescued me from Herod's clutches and from everything the Jewish people were anticipating. So he kind of realizes this is really happening. God has rescued me. Sweet. When this had dawned on him, he went to the house of Mary, the mother of John, also called Mark, where many people had gathered and were praying. So he kind of heads over to where he finds this large corporate prayer meeting, right? Peter knocked at the outer entrance, and a servant girl named Rhoda came to answer the door. When she recognized Peter's voice, she was so overjoyed, she ran back without opening it and exclaimed, Peter is at the door! So they're praying for Peter, right? And she goes, answers the door. She hears Peter outside, hey, let me in. Some angel just rescued me from prison. And she's like, I can't believe it. And she leaves him outside, at which point Peter's so glad that angel made him get dressed, right? He's basically just left out there in the cold. You're out of your mind, they told her. What are you trying to say? Get back in here. Help us pray for Peter. Let's pray that he gets released from prison. What are you talking about? Back to praying, right? Not realizing that God had indeed answered their prayer. When she kept insisting that it was so, they said, it must be his angel. You know, this isn't... Luke isn't affirming that belief. It's just saying this was some kind of explanation that they gave. They're thinking she's kind of crazy here. But Peter kept on knocking. He's like, hey, guys, it's me, Peter. Really like to be in there with you. And when they opened the door and saw him, they were astonished, shocked. Here they are praying for his freedom, praying for his release. I mean, I'm sure this was just totally baffling to them to realize that God had answered the very thing they were praying for. And Peter motioned with his hand for them to be quiet and described how the Lord had brought him out of prison, tell James and the brothers about this. James, obviously, Jesus' brother there, not John's brother who had already been killed. He said, and then he left for another place. Okay, so we look at this story. Let's think. Let's think about what we can learn about prayer from this account. The first, as I already mentioned, is that prayer is a powerful spiritual weapon. Okay, this is not just something for your own edification. This is a tool for your ministry. That we can pray things, and it will actually change the world around us. It's kind of a mysterious thing. Okay, I'm not pretending to totally understand how this works. But some way, in God choosing to use humans, right? This whole concept of human agency that we talk about. And we're amazed, right, that God would want to use us to share his good news with other people, that he would want to use us to disciple other people. So we have a category for God using our actions, and that there being some sort of weightiness to that. That if we say no to him, that if we don't share the good news, that if we don't bring people what they need to be equipped, that there's a loss, right? That what we do matters, right? We believe that. And that same principle applies to prayer. That there are probably cases where our failure to pray might be what's holding back God from acting. You think about the situation of Mark 9, right? Where the disciples had been trying to cast out the demon and this man's son. And they're like, Lord, we can't do it. He said, this kind can only come out through prayer. When you're ready to pray about it, God's spirit is going to be there ready to act. It's weird. You know, I'm not trying to paint a picture of, so, you know, if you just check off your prayer box for your ministry, then everything will go how you want it to go, right? That's not the picture I'm trying to paint. But there is a relationship there between the Spirit of God acting and our prayer. It's real. It's not just this imagined, positive thinking that will make you feel better about the world. It actually works. Okay, this is an amazingly powerful tool that God has given us. Again, Halsby, the work of praying is prerequisite to all other work in the kingdom of God. Do I believe that? Man, I feel like God has been so gracious with me on this. To think that I've had any ministry success ever with my pitiful excuse for prayer life. You know, I that's what I think when I read that. And I think it's something that God's cultivated over time, convincing me more and more of that truth. That praying fiercely, right, to him, for him to act, man, something that he's continuing to teach me about. All right, so for anything to happen, we got to be praying. For the simple reason that it is by prayer that we couple the powers of heaven to our helplessness. Right, and Halsby builds this whole argument. It's like prayer is basically realizing you have nothing to give, right? You got nothing. But the beauty of it is then we call upon the power of God, the powers which can turn water into wine and remove mountains in our own lives and in the lives of others, the powers which can awaken those who sleep in sin and raise up the dead, the powers which can capture strongholds and make the impossible possible. That is the power of prayer. It is seeing the God of the universe, almighty, all-powerful, righteous God, intervene in the lives of broken people, seeing him rescue them, seeing him spread his church out in ways that we could have never imagined. Seeing him transform the most unlikely people into leaders who have given their lives to him. These are miracles. These are supernatural occurrences fueled by the power of prayer. This is the way we got to view it. Okay, so also just want to make this point real quick here that prayer depends on the object of faith, not on the amount of faith. Right? That's clear here. Surely these people in Acts were praying for James, right? Things didn't turn out so well for him, right? But then the same people are praying for Peter, right? It's not that the amount of faith is what caused them to have their prayer answered with Peter. And what's more is when their prayer has been answered, they can't even believe it. They'd rather get back to praying then notice that God has answered their prayer. And so I think a lot of times what's helpful for us is to not, you know, sometimes I get in this mentality where it's like, I got to be really serious about this. If I expect God to do anything, got to show him I'm really believing that it's going to happen. Rather than, I need to focus on who I'm talking to. Who is God? How is he? Who do I think he is? How can I ask for something like this? Because I'm talking to the God that can do anything. And I know he wants this. Also, prayer is enhanced when it involves others, right? Corporate prayer. This is well taught in the New Testament. We think about Matthew 18. Again, I tell you that if two of you on earth agree about anything you ask for, it will be done for you by my Father in heaven. For where two or three come together in my name, there I am with them. So it's not like this is like some like magical formula where if I can like trick two other Christians into praying for something with me, then God has to do it or something creepy like that. But what this is saying is that there is power in numbers. There is strength in numbers. Okay, there's something supernatural happening there when I get together with other believers and we and our spirits commune together with God and we ask him to act. It's weird. It's kind of like, I feel like you can pray differently almost when you're praying with other people. You know, a few years back, my husband and I trained and ran the Columbus Half Marathon, right? And probably part of the only reason I was able to run 13 and a half miles or whatever, 13.2 miles, was because I tricked other people into training with me in my home church. And so, because you go on these like what seem like eternal runs every weekend, but and you do these short runs during the week. And so I do all these, you know, short 2 to 5 mile runs during the week. And then when we had our like 8-9 mile run on the weekend, there'd be like a group of five of us. And there's something about running alongside other people that makes you feel like you can do it. And you're like encouraging each other. You're distracting each other. You know, you're giving, there's this motivation and this thing that all week I'd be like, oh, I can't even think about what 8 miles on my feet running would be like. You know, when I was alongside my friends doing it, I enjoyed it. Right? You ever think that way? You're like, I could not pray for a whole hour. No way. On my own, I'd get so distracted. You know, you think about doing that with other people though. And this real cool thing happens, doesn't it? Where we start to feed off of each other's prayers. We begin to feel maybe even more risky in our prayers. Like I'm going to ask God for more, feeding off of each other, motivating one another. That's powerful. That's what they were doing, right? They were having this large corporate meeting, praying with one another. This is something that we have got to believe in. Right? What's your prayer group like in your home church? Maybe it's not as well attended as you like. Good thing it only takes two or three, right? And that's all right. Even if it's only a small number of you guys, show it up every week. Is it the kind of thing where you show up and you're like, man, there's only like three people here again. Why do we even do this? You do this because Matthew 18, okay? He says, 2, 3, I'm there. I'm ready to act. We got to have that attitude. Are we making the most of that time? Well, would you rather be able to say, well, we have 85% of our home church showing up for our prayer meeting? I mean, that would be nice. Or would you rather be able to say, you know, maybe there's only a few of us there, but it's awesome. We're surprised that, you know, an hour's gone by or whatever by the time we're done. We love it. We all look forward to it and we see God moving. It's so edifying to get together, right? You know, I've had this experience with our prayer meeting where you show up on Friday and you're like, for the prayer meeting, and it's like, look at all God did this week. This is sweet. And, you know, maybe, you know, if you're in a ministry situation where you've got young families and you're just not going to be able to get everybody out to a prayer meeting, there's other ways to do it. What about people just getting together at different times, little pockets of prayer throughout the week? If you're spending time with another believer, why not pray with them? Right? Why wouldn't we take that opportunity? It's really hard to think of a bad time to pray. Right? And what about this? Why don't you pray with your spouse every day? You live together. You're both Christians, right? This would apply to you. This is something that really we should be doing in our marriages. And this is something that me and my husband tried to commit to early on in our marriage, that we were going to pray together every day. And I'm not going to lie, there are some days where I'm like, you pray, right? I'm there with you in spirit. I'm really tired, whatever it is. But I think that this should be something that we're ministering together, right? With your spouse, that is your co-laborer. You ought to be praying together. There's no reason why you shouldn't be praying together every day. And for those of you that are single in ministry houses, well, you just lucked out because you got more than one person living with you that you get to pray with every day. Right? This is what we should be doing. We see that this is something that the early church was so devoted to. This idea of prayer. And I think the prayer meeting is good. You got to have that vital prayer meeting. But we have all these opportunities outside of that meeting to pray with one another that we really should be utilizing. All right. We need to persist in prayer. Gary talked about this a good bit and the servant team retreat, so I'm not going to spend too much time on this. And probably a lot of you have read that David Wells article, which I totally recommend if you haven't read it, called Rebellion Against the Status Quo, Prayer Rebellion Against the Status Quo. The idea that when we look at the world, when we look at these situations, we don't think, I guess it's just going to be that way. I guess I can't do anything. Instead, we say, no. I'm going to go to God who can do something about this. And I'm going to ask him to act. Right? That we have that kind of attitude. That kind of, you know, unashamed, bold access to God. And that we take use of it. And then finally, we should expect God to respond. That as we pray, As we're modeling prayer with, you know, in our worker team, in our cell group, with our disciples, in our prayer meeting, with our families, in our ministry house, that we're anticipating that God will respond, right? Obviously, in this situation, in Acts 12, they're a little shocked, a little surprised when God comes through. And I've had that. I've definitely had that where I'm like, you know, I've been praying for this and praying for this. And I can't even believe that he answered it, right? But I think having that kind of expectation that God will respond is something that really helps you enjoy how personal prayer is. I think about the things that I've prayed, you know, even something as simple. And I pray this pretty much multiple times a week, right? All the time. I'm going into spending time with somebody. I'm going to hang out with my husband. I'm going to a meeting, whatever it is. And in my heart, I'm like, I kind of don't want to do this. I'm selfish. I'd rather not serve people, not engage with people. And, you know, I know that sounds bad, so maybe I'll just show up and go through the motions and, hi, how are you? Yeah, what can I pray for you? Yeah, get me out of here, right? Have that kind of mindset. And I just, over and over again, am amazed when I see God, when I say, God, my attitude sucks. I'm selfish. I kind of just want to worry about myself and keep my head low tonight. Change my heart. Help me make the most of this opportunity you're giving me tonight at this meeting or with this person. And to see him, he pretty much always comes through on that one, right? If I'm willing to let him. If I'm willing to go to him and ask for him to change my heart, and maybe that's not, you know, like, that's not releasing someone from prison. I understand that. But still, like, that person, that expectation, I'm going to bring this to the Lord, and I expect him to answer this. It really shows you there's just such a personal aspect to this, that the God of the universe is listening to me and willing and ready to intervene in my life and in my ministry. That's pretty sweet.
So before we bring Gary up here and start talking about all of these awesome ways that God has been intervening and has been acting in our church, I just kind of want to leave you with this thought. Don't just pray for your ministry. Make prayer a part of your ministry. It's not just that you have some kind of strategy for how you're going to accomplish God's work. Make prayer an integral part of that strategy. You know, it's not, I'm going to teach Bible studies, I'm going to lead a home church, I'm going to disciple people, I'm going to meet with people, and I'll pray for that. But start to view prayer as part of that strategy. That the part of the ministry I'm doing, part of the service, part of the leadership that I do is prayer. So cool. Why don't we bring you? Oh, yeah, we can take some questions. How about we do, I can't really see that clock, 5-10 minutes. So if you guys got something you want to say about this, thoughts, anything? We got some mics up here.
One of the things that I noticed in this passage is that the people are praying for Peter for an extended period of time.
Yeah.
I mean, I notice in my own prayer life how easy it is for me to pray for something and then run out of words, you know? and so then I start expanding my prayers to other things and other people. Yeah. And yet, I know in this case, and also just some personal experience, the times when I dedicate, you know, more than what comes naturally to me to pray for one thing,
right,
the results are very different.
Yeah.
And after he was, you know, he arrived at the door, they were still praying for us. You know,
right.
It was like hours and hours.
Right. I think that kind of goes along with the idea of persistence in prayer. And also just, I don't know, I just feel like our whole culture is so ADD, right? We're like this, okay, I'm done. And the idea of really just thinking about laboring in prayer, not only just being like, you know, it's not that mindless repetition, but it's just really pouring out that heart to God, and that being persistent in prayer means listening before God too, and letting him talk to us about, you know, whatever we're praying for. Yeah, Leslie?
I've talked with people lately who are worried about the other extreme of like God is just sitting there powerless waiting for us to tell him what to do. Since, you know, prayer is effective, that doesn't it make God look like he's at our beck and call? And I think it's just so helpful to remember that God's sovereign, and he sovereignly permits us to not invite his power in. So it's not that he's waiting for us to tell him his next move, but instead that, I mean, he can enact his will whenever he wants.
Totally.
But also, you know, he's chosen sovereignly to allow us to go along in our own self-effort and our self-will and not invite his power in. So just to remember, you know, he's still powerful, but he's given us this awesome privilege of turning to him and really harnessing his power and his will for what we do for him.
Yeah. And it's a missed opportunity on our part, too. It's like, yeah, God's sovereign. He's going to do what he's going to do. But do I want to be a part of that? Right? That's what we're missing out on. Yeah, over here.
One thing I've been struck on recently when reflecting on my own prayer life is my tendency to pray when I feel helpless, which I think is good.
Mm.
And I like the Second O'Halsby quote you had up there where it said, you know, we call on the powers of prayer when we're helpless or whatever. And the thing I was reflecting on, thinking about was, yeah, I'm praying when I feel helpless, but the fact of the matter is, in these kind of situations, I'm always helpless.
Right, exactly.
You know, and I need to be praying more, and I need to be reflecting more on how I don't have it together in any of these areas.
Yeah.
And I just thought that was really cool.
Yeah, good point.
Just a practical point. I've thought a lot about spiritual giftings, and you read the passages that talk about how God has gifted people and how it's important those gifts are used in the church. So I would, I guess, from my own experience, suggest that if there's somebody in your group who shows some gifting in prayer, to really encourage them.
Yeah.
Because as they use that gift, it could ignite something in those around them. And I just get the sense that there's a lot of people who in our home churches who don't really know what their giftings are. There may be some people gifted in prayer who just haven't, I guess, been encouraged and taken off. So I think that could be a huge impact on a church.
Right on. Yeah, Ross?
Yeah. Cool teaching, Ruth. I thought a couple of months ago, a friend of mine and I, we started reading Spiritual Leadership by Oswald Sanders, and there's a chapter in there on prayer, which is real convicting because the first thing he says is that the spiritual leader should outpace everyone else in prayer. And it was crazy because I've done a pretty poor job of witnessing to my family ever since becoming a Christian. And a couple of my brothers live in California, so it's like, how am I even ever going to see them? And after that chapter, I was like, well, I'll just start praying for them. And now one has transferred back to OSU.
That's awesome.
And called me out of the blue and was like, I got this class that requires that I listen to someone speak. So when's the next time that you teach it that thing? I'll come to it. And it's like, I think I mentioned it to him once and invited him out and he kind of blew it off. But it's just sort of cool to see how even when I don't do anything and I'm like, I'll just start praying for this. Like God really orchestrates it. So you're right. It does work.
It's awesome. And I think just keeping track of those kind of personal stories in our life is really important too. You got to write it down. You got to remember it. Yeah.
Ruth, thanks for your encouragement for married couples to pray with each other. I know Gwen and I have felt really convicted about praying more together as we're doing God's work. And I know for me, as a guy who freaks out when his wife gets emotional, it's a good way for me to wade in with her, praying with her. And also, the book Praying Life by Paul Miller is a great book on prayer and things that keep us from praying, and I found it very helpful.
That's awesome. Yeah, good recommendation.
Two quick points. The idea about the object of prayer being very important. For our corporate prayer, we start off, we pray about different attributes of God, through the Word, which really helps us set a foundation for then intercession and praying for ministry and that sort of thing. And also, for me, I've learned that, you know, my prayer life is a real litmus test for how, like, self-indulgent I am, the things that really are bothering me, that are annoyances, irritants, if I reflect on how much I'm praying about them, you know, usually I'm not, and usually that's, so when I realize that I'm not praying about something, that's usually when I'm kind of running amok in my own head.
Good point. All right, yeah.
One of the things that I've seen for myself is that, like, my passions seem to line up with whatever I'm researching, whatever I'm reading about, and like you brought up like Halsby's book, you brought up Chuck Smith's book, someone just brought up Paul Miller's book. There's also like Heibel's book, Too Busy Not to Pray. And one of the things I found for myself is like, you know, reading like these books like back to back, like over the course of maybe a quarter, because in the college group everything tends to last in like 10-week increments, is saying like for a quarter I'm going to do all the research I can on prayer and really commit myself to trying to dig up good teachings on prayer, good papers on prayer, research the Word, just like go through it and read about prayer and kind of get God's perspective on prayer has been like fantastic. And for myself, I found it like really exciting and really invigorating to like just get this back-to-back different perspectives, because like all these guys are like really wise. They all, like, you get the impression like these guys pray a ton, but they all have like this slightly different take or these different insights that like really, really help you in cultivating your own prayer life and figuring out, you know, what do you want to do? How do you want to make it work? You know, what guys would you snag to like bring into like a small prayer group of like maybe two or three guys that are going to pray for your whole home church every week? You know, stuff like that has been like reading about these and different things, and then like hearing stories like out of Acts, like you realize like God wants to use us.
Yeah.
He wants to use prayer as like one of the main tools to like empower and transform people. And, you know, Chuck Smith brings up that analogy of like it's a spiritual weapon.
Right.
And it's God's got to just kind of look at us with kind of amazement when we sit there and complain about like people aren't changing and things aren't happening and I wish this person were different, but we neglect to pray for them. And, you know, I would just encourage people to, you know, snag a bunch of these books and just do back-to-back-to-back study and really just pray for that spirit of prayer that Housby talks about, because that's, like, one of the most awesome prayers we can pray.
Yeah, I think definitely if you're feeling like, I don't have the motivation to pray, you read one of those guys, you find yourself with a new fire. All right, let's make this last one.
The slide you had up there said that this group were was praying earnestly for Peter.
Yeah.
And it sounds like on one hand you can pray, on the other hand you can pray earnestly. And that can, I don't know what the difference is. Could you explain that?
Well, I mean, that earnestly, or some versions say fervently. I don't think the picture there is that, like, you got to really convince the Lord that you mean it. You better start fasting and make sure you're praying at 5 a.m. or, like, that's how God knows it's, like, earnest. But with, you know, the way I've taken it is, this is what I've got, Lord, and you're the only one I can bring this to. I do a lot of things earnestly, right? I take them seriously and I do it quickly and I'm with, you know, like, with everything I've got. You know, like the way you might prepare a teaching, the way you might prepare for a difficult conversation with someone in your group. We think about the earnestness that we bring to those aspects of our ministry, and, you know, that same kind of fervent, like, this is important, this matters, we're going to pray this way. So that's how I've taken it. Cool. Let's bring Gary up.
I'll throw a couple more things in on this prayer, corporate prayer. I think there's a place for leadership here in our prayer meetings. I was struck by one author a couple years ago said, "How often do you pray for your prayer meeting?" That really struck me. And the idea was that someone there is already holding that up in prayer. Someone there is doing the very best they can to come already in the spirit, because, you know, we kind of limp in covered with slime from our day. You know how people limp in, and so if someone's already there who's prayed, and there's a little bit of a fire glowing from that person, then it begins to, things go better. Second would be to guide people's expectations. You know that, we're kind of limping in here, we're covered with slime from the world, and maybe as we start to pray, it's going to be like a car on a cold morning. Right? This is why the Puritans said, pray until you pray. We know as we continue to pray in faith, there's going to be an ignition point. When the Spirit of God gets control of our praying, and then we will begin to see liftoff, we'll begin to see Him lighting one prayer after another. But we should anticipate that it'll probably be a struggle at the beginning and maybe for the first several minutes. That's why we need to pray until we pray. And then the third thing I would add would be, it seems like good prayer meetings are kind of a mixture of three different kinds of prayer. I don't think they have to be done in any, you know, rigid order, but I kind of am monitoring, are we having all three of these kinds of prayer going on as we pray together? One is thanks, praise, or thanksgiving. Someone already mentioned, get our eyes on God and to choose to be thankful. I find often it's best to start there, but not in a rigid way. Choose to be thankful for what God is doing. And then there's, I don't know what you call it, it's where members of the body there, they're praying, get honest at times about how they're really in defeat or how they're really afraid. And I think that's good. That's a good place for that to come up, for people to have that kind of openness. And then the other members tend to rally around that person right after they pray, come alongside them and pray for them. And then, of course, there's the intercession where we're praying by name for people that we're sharing Christ with, praying by name for the newer people in our home group, etc. I find that God, you know, usually wants a mix of those three interwoven in a good prayer meeting. So, anyway, we're going to practice some small group corporate prayer at the end of our meeting today. More about that in a little bit here. We are at war. Anyone feel like they're at war? We are at war, and sometimes, often in war, you're so focused on your part of the front that you're on, or so focused on the difficulties that you are dealing with in your part of the war, that it can be discouraging, or it can just be myopic. That's all there's really going on. I was struck by watching the Band of Brothers again this summer. Now, when those guys would come off the front, which was very difficult, they'd be back, I don't know, somewhere else for R&R for a little while, and they'd be showing those war newsreels. And what they were doing in those newsreels is helping people to see what else was going on in different fronts of the war, and especially where advances were taking place, because this had a powerful, encouraging effect on people to see the big picture. So that's what we're going to do a little bit here this morning with regard to the war and our church. I think the other reason why we wanted to spend a little bit of time doing this is that we are one church. We are not separate churches. This is a big church, and so by necessity, it has to be broken up into spheres and ministry teams and home groups, etc. And I think that's all good, but it's also dangerous, and I feel the danger of being a church that's large and segmented, that we can become provincial. We can begin to think our part of the church is all that really matters. And in my own heart, when I become provincial in my outlook, then I become competitive in my linkage toward other parts of the church. And that's bad. That's disunifying. And really, one of the best ways that we can counteract that, one of the best ways that we can be diligent to preserve the unity of the Spirit in the bond of peace, is to pray, giving thanks for what God is doing in other parts of our church, and to pray for what God is doing through other parts of our church. So we're going to practice some of that after we watch this newsreel. One of the things that has happened, most of you know, over the past few years is a sense that God is kind of compelling members of this church to go out beyond the people that are their immediate neighbors, the people that are like them socioeconomically, etc., into, you know, if you think about what groups of people are within a 2-mile radius of this building, and how much the answer to that question has changed in the last 15 or 20 years. If you go down to 4th Street, where the campus, the college ministry is, and where the 4th Street adult sphere is, and you ask that same question, the answer is even more diverse. And so one of the most encouraging things that's been happening is God is raising up leaders to initiate ministries into pockets of people that we have never really known existed before, even. And he's doing some exciting things. So we're going to hear from two reports on from that part of the front. First from Danny Walker. Where is he? There he is.
I'm here to talk about a ministry that Xenos has been involved in not yet 3 years. It's 2.5 years, a little more than that. And a lot of people here in this room and a lot of your members have participated by donating things and by giving rides and by getting involved doing a lot of things. And I first wanted to just acknowledge so much support from the leadership to all of you, to your members. So thank you for that. There is a Sunday meeting here. I'll just give you an update on several things. There is a sun. If you're here at 9:30 or 10 o'clock, you know that this campus is pretty heavily represented by people from the Himalayan mountains. There's a lot here. Last Sunday there was something like 86 adults and their kids swarming around all over the place. And the Sunday meeting keeps growing. also for years, and that's been going on, it began in January of last year. And also for about 2.5 years, there have been apartment Bible studies, and these are really key. A lot of people have gotten their own lives enriched by participating in these apartment Bible studies, and they're also growing. I put 50 adults there, and that's the Bhutanese adults, but really the pool of involvement's greater than that, and children come there too. Xenos has been doing a lot every summer, and even the fall retreat, VBS, Oasis, and the Bhutanese youth really love it. And what's key here is that there's a caste system in India, Nepal, Bhutan, and what's key is that the high caste like to come to Xenos, but then they get a little alienated and don't come, whereas the low caste and some of the other tribal groups have been converting rapidly, both here, in other parts of the U.S., and in Asia. And the high caste kids just love what we're doing in our youth program, so I think that that's going to be the stepping stone to reaching the whole community, which is about 600 in Columbus, and several hundred of those 600 come to Xenos. We're real excited because we're starting to see workers raised up, and that's a prayer point that in Oasis, in VBS, in various settings, in the apartment Bible studies, we're starting to see indigenous workers being raised up to teach and serve in various roles. Lots and lots of people are converting rapidly. Basically, it's a Hindu community, but almost all the Buddhists are converting, Tamang Buddhists, and almost all the low caste is converting. We've had 30-plus baptisms in Columbus from people, and they don't have any Christian relatives. And but this goes throughout the community, from the grandparents on down to the youth. And I would add one more bullet point to what's been happening, and that is a lot of Anglos, a lot of us, who didn't know what kind of ministry we would be doing for sure, have had our lives enriched. I was thinking about, and there's so many examples I could give of this, but I was thinking about Kim. Was I bet she never would have ever imagined that she would be in the birthing room with Deo Maya, you know, playing that kind of role. And there's Cheryl and I were invited to a naming party, and I'm like, I think we're naming this baby. And she's like, why do you think that? And it's like, we better have a name ready. So, prayer points, pray for the conversion of the high caste. A lot of our good friends haven't converted. Increased ministry with high school and college. We've had a couple things that we're trying to get started, but there's really not that much momentum, and pray for indigenous workers.
All right, I'm going to report on some answered prayer in several different student ministries, including some key turnarounds from a negative situation to an increasingly positive ones. In junior high, we're seeing a strong surge forward with an increased number of salvations, very measurable, very noticeable. Also, planting of new groups, which happens when a junior high cell group gets too large to handle anymore, and they have to plant a new group. And also non-Xenos kids, the percentage of the group that is non-Xenos is increasing, which indicates kids doing evangelism out in the culture. So all of these, and also this one maybe, 100% transition from Oasis, that's pretty good. Didn't lose a single person in transferring out of Oasis. Sometimes apples can fall off the cart there. I left one off. I thought that was the best one, too. It was the fact that mentoring of junior high kids is up from like a year ago or a year and a half ago or so, we only had 11 kids under discipleship. And now we've got over 80. So I think that this is probably really connected with some of the good news that we see coming out of junior high. We brought Brian Ronk in to lead this ministry, and he's been doing a really good job. So and this is work. All of this junior high work, virtually 98% of it, is by adult ministry workers. So this is something that the adult ministry can feel really good about, and because they're directly being bearing fruit at a high level in this group. In high school, we've been very concerned, and I've shared several years running now at our State of the Church, that our high school groups aren't doing very well. They don't grow, and we lose a lot of people. And really for years, it's actually slowly declined by a point or two for several years. This year, not the same at all. And this is from when I was up at Epic. I don't have the last month or two on there, but it's definitely surged forward. Record attendance at our big meetings. More home churches being planted. And we're quite excited about the turnaround on high school ministry. We're also going to try a new third CT for high school out in Gahanna. We've got three home churches out there. And it's going to be all volunteer, so it won't be an expense to the church. And this is just too far for them to drive to come in. Hopefully this will boost their attendance at CT to have one nearby and also help with their outreach out there. Well, then there was Holden Beach. This was as people were coming in. We got this huge auditorium. When it finally filled up, there were over 1,000 students at it, and a super excited meeting. It was a real blessing to everyone there to spend a week down there of, you know, pretty much unsupervised freedom. I was intrigued that we used to always have, you know, these incidents. There would be, you know, sexual misbehavior. There would be vandalism. There would be something gross going on, heavy partying, drunks, sex on the beach. Nothing like that. And instead, you just had people really focused on their times of study and fellowship, and brought a number of non-Christian kids along with them, and 15 different people received Christ during the week. So. That's what I got. Keep praying.
Hello. When we moved into 4th Street, the Indianola Middle School that was right across the alley was open and running. And Debbie Campbell started volunteering in the school. And she was basically just trying to help them meet whatever needs they had. And during one of these meetings, one of the parents said, who was not a Christian, by the way, "I think my kids would really benefit from a Bible study. Is this something you guys could handle?" So Debbie said no, and she actually told them, of course, and she came to a group of us and said, "Will you guys start this Bible study?" So we started this Bible study, and we met the first week. We got all prepared and planned, and we got together, and nobody came. So we prayed. That's what we did that night. And so we got together the next week, and we planned, and we prayed. Nobody came. So we prayed again, and pretty soon two kids started coming. The girl and the boy, who were the children of this mother, came to this Bible study, and they came for a few weeks and brought a few people. And so as time has grown, more kids have come, and we've had a bunch of people join us. We have this army of people that God has brought together from the college group and from the adult groups, and this thing has started to take off. Let's see if I can use it. Woo, it works. In 2011, we have seen God blow our minds in Renegade ministry. We have 5 different Bible studies now that are up and running. Because what happens with Renegade is it started off as a junior high Bible study. And so you go to pick them up and their parent is like, can you take the rest of my kids too? And so pretty soon we're trying to have this junior high Bible study, but we have like 4-year-olds and 7-year-olds. And so what we quickly did was God moved and brought us the team we needed to do 5 different Bible studies. So we have a pre through first, 2nd and 3rd, a 4th and 5th, a junior high, and a high school Bible study. So those are all up and running and growing. And this year we had 38 kids come to know the Lord. And I know it's unbelievable. And just a few weeks ago, we had our high school baptism, and 11 students got up and gave their testimonies. And I got to tell you, it would blow your mind to see the videotape, to see that, you know, you do this ministry, and a lot of times you don't know if they're even understanding what they're hearing, because you're breaking up fights and you're getting punched, and there's all kinds of stuff going on, and we're just like, we don't know what we're doing, and we're just trying to show them love. And to have these 11 guys get up and tell how God has changed their lives, all of us who were there were just like, how does God let us do this? It's unbelievable. So just in the month of September, we have over 100 kids who are coming regularly to these Bible studies. So it's been remarkable. And one of the things that has led to this were these camps that we had. We had 3 camps, a sports camp, a music camp, and an art camp. And the way these things go, we have kids come the first day, and all of us are there praying because we have no idea what's going to happen. And then more come, and then more come, and then more come. And so we ended up having 99 different kids walk through the door, a big chunk of who had never walked through the door before. And 20 of the kids who came to know the Lord came to know the Lord at these camps. It was an amazing work of the Spirit, because we had this army of junior high, high school, college, adults, people making food, people praying, all these people driving us, and God did a miracle. It was an amazing 3 weeks, and we all slept a lot as soon as it was over. And then what happened with these camps last year was we met this boy, D'Angelo, and he started coming to our Renegade Bible study, and he was from a different neighborhood. He was from the South Side. And so he started coming, and he started bringing his friends and his family, and they started coming, and more of them started coming. And pretty soon, we had this pocket of people coming from the South Side. And we're like, oh my God, and we have people driving over to South Side, bringing them over to 4th Street. Well, then a group of adults from the Hickman Home Church who rock came, and they came with the specific purpose of trying to love and invest in these kids. And so they came in earlier this year, and they started building relationships and getting to know these kids. And then just last Sunday, we had our first Renegade plant, where we have planted a new Renegade Bible study down to the South Side. It's awesome. And so, yeah. So they had 13 kids come, 5 of whom have never come to Renegade before, so they're like, oh, we have growth already. It's totally cool. They came for the first time. They don't know what they're doing. We don't know what we're doing, and that's kind of been the theme through Renegade. Nobody knows what they're doing except God. He knows what he's doing. And so he's taken a bunch of people who come together with just this idea of, let's just love kids with the love of Christ. And God has made it abundantly clear how much he wants the love and the hope that he has to come and change their lives and their family lives. So we're, you know, praying, thanking God for all he's done. And we don't even know what he's going to do in the future. There's already this huge group of kids from this street called Delbert. They all live in the same street. And we pull on the street with our vehicles, and they know our cars, and they swarm. And I'm not kidding you. They swarm from their houses onto the street. Some of them even climbed on my van last week. I had to tell them to get off. They come out, and they want to come. And so God keeps bringing them. Last 2 weeks ago, we had 20 kids from that one neighborhood. So it's amazing work of God that he's doing, and with these kids in the neighborhood around 4th Street. Okay. Oh, yeah, one thing to pray for. We really, really need a new place for the South Side. They're meeting in a girls' ministry house, but it was real clear last week that they're going to grow out of it like yesterday. So pray that God will move to provide a space for these guys, because if it grows anything like the rest of them have, who knows how many kids they'll have like tomorrow. So pray that God will provide a space for these folks on the South Side who are branching out courageously to love kids down there.
Thanks.
That is amazing. What an amazing story. We think a lot of us in adult work look around and we feel like our field is so hard to penetrate and people are so comfortable and so insensate to the gospel. But to realize that just down the street from where you live are these incredible pockets of receptivity, it's amazing. So very excited about that. And one of the things I think, too, that we're pretty excited about around this church is our mission program. And one of the things that we have found really kind of cool is that not only can we send some of our people, and not only can we give money to these projects, but there is so much talent in our church and people who are really wanting to make a difference with the skill sets that they have. And several years ago, we were thinking about this and got connected with World Relief's work in Haiti. This is 5 years ago, I guess now, something like that. Anyway, a bunch of us went down there and realized several things that were really sweet, which was one, that what we're talking about with Haiti is something that's really close by, it's fairly inexpensive to get to, and it's impossible not to be there without doing good. So we connected with the World Relief staff there, who are really sweet, godly people, who had a great vision for what they wanted to accomplish, and came back with a vision to communicate that to the church, which you guys all responded to really well. And there's been about 100 people who've gone down to Haiti since then to get involved in short-term missions. And of course, you know, since a year and a half ago when the earthquake hit, everything has changed in a pretty radical way. And that has raised questions then about what does it look like for us as a church to partner with what's going on in Haiti. And so this summer, we brought a group, the president of a Bible school that's connected with World Team and the denomination that they have spawned down there in southern Haiti, to come together to talk about the challenges of doing Christian work in a culture now where 800,000 people live as more or less permanent refugees living in tents all over the major cities of the South, Port-au-Prince and Léogon and Jacmel, places like that. And we had a real sweet interaction with them when we talked about changing their paradigm to kind of the big man organized church, you know, basically American church in the 1950s is what church in Haiti is today. And they just realized how unsustainable and how impossible it is to do that kind of work in an environment where the culture is just completely collapsed. There are no institutions in Haiti that are sustainable other than the local church, the body of Christ. And so what we had talked about with them is, can we come together and learn what it looks like to do home church or tent church ministry in Haiti? And so they were responsive. We spent many hours together over the Summer Institute praying and discussing this issue. And then they went back and talked to the denominational people, and they recently wrote a letter to us saying, yes, absolutely, let's partner together and let's figure out how we can make scores and scores of tent churches all over these communities that have no structure, no real Christian witness. And so that's something that we've been able to, you know, the experience that we all have here as a fellowship are able to immediately transfer to a place where the responsiveness of the gospel is amazing. So what we are going to continue doing is send down 2 or 3 short-term trips a year, combining medical relief, a lot of work with children especially, and then a lot of instruction to young adults about mobilizing and beginning that whole process of evangelism and discipleship within the framework of these tent communities. And so we're very excited about that. This is an awesome opportunity for us as a church to look around and realize we can greatly expand the ministry of this church in a very receptive field for a very minimal amount of money and a lot of participation from us as adults. So it's been a lot of fun. You'll hear more about this, I'm sure, as planning goes on. We're going to start a trip in January. And I know some people are pretty interested in that already. But anyway, it's an ongoing thing, and we just really want your prayer for what the Lord is doing in this emerging partnership with our Haitian brethren. So thanks.
Okay, I'm going to add the slides I didn't have or forgot. Back to college ministry. I was also supposed to report that Slim reported at that meeting down we had there that that group has reached over 370 people for Christ during the past 12 months. It's like more than one every day. And we also did a follow-up study and found that 3 and 6 months that 80% of them are still there walking or hanging around. So it's maybe they're not all one, but... So partly based on this, the college ministry is planting a new home church sphere, a sphere of home churches, and it's going to be led by Ryan Weingartner. Why don't we have him show himself? Where are you? There he is. That's the newest senior sphere leader in our church. He's gone out with a sizable group of over 240 students in 12, soon to be 14 groups, and this all came from one original home church and has grown up to that size, so it's a real blessing from God there.
All right, we're going to go over to the European front. So many of you know we have three indigenously led house churches in Eastern Europe, and right now there's a leadership team that has seven individuals representing these three groups that are meeting together. And increasingly over the last several years, the indigenous leaders have been taking more and more responsibility, have a real vision for reaching their city for Christ. Two of these three churches hope to plant within the next several months. We'd really appreciate your prayers for that. But one of the significant milestones they've reached is they're at the point where they are going to appoint elders. So this is super exciting for this team here. The indigenous people and workers are saying, we want to own this. This is our church. We want to see our city reach for Christ. So we would just ask that you would pray for unity for these three groups, that you would pray for wisdom as they select a couple elders here, because this is a big it's a big decision. And we pray for their protection. Again, as they're going out in a very dark place, as people are stepping up to lead in a new way, the devil is not going to ignore that. So please pray for them. I'd like to welcome a couple that came home this summer. They were involved in this work since 1999. They played an integral role in discipleship and reaching their friends for Christ. They've helped with translation materials, and they should be commended for their years of service there. So thanks. All right, let's jump over to Asia. So in Cambodia, this is a picture of the Mercy Medical Center. Many of you in this room helped contribute to make this a reality, so we thank you for that. And two of the most significant needs in Cambodia are for education and for medical care. And it's really cool because our folks there, they're involved in both of those endeavors. Tim is the director of the Mercy Medical Center. And so I wanted to share a story about an individual that came to the Mercy Medical Center. There's a guy named Juan who's from a province up north. It's called Prevahir. And it's right on the Thailand border. It's about 5 or 6 hours from Phnom Penh. Now, Juan had a pretty serious heart condition. He had gone to a number of different hospitals and was unable to receive any help. He heard about the Mercy Medical Center, and so he found his way down to Phnom Penh and was able to be treated there, diagnosed and treated. And as the case with all patients that come to the Mercy Medical Center, they take the opportunity to pray with the individuals and to share the gospel. Well, Vaughn chose to receive Christ. So he came to Christ. This was in March of 2011. March of this year. So they sent him back to Prevahir, and then he came back for a follow-up visit, and he reported that there were, this was a follow-up visit in May, and he reported that there were 30 households that had come to faith. And so they thought, wow, we should probably go check this out. So they went up there, and not only was, you know, Vaughn was had a house church that he was leading, but there were five other house churches that were meeting in surrounding villages. So it's just amazing. So this was in just a matter of a few months. Well, recently, they sent a pastor from a church in Phnom Penh up there, and Vaughn and him met with this gathering of believers. There were 260 that came out that had said they had, prayed to receive Christ. And so then they said, well, they were near a body of water. This was a big gathering. They said, who wants to be baptized? And so they counted 260 people were baptized that day. So it's very cool. So both the school and the Mercy Medical Center are having a profound impact. They're meeting, you know, significant physical needs. And at the same time, people are hearing the most important need. They're hearing the love of Christ, and they're having the opportunity to come into relationship with Him. And then one last thing. Another couple that came home this summer from Southeast Asia. They've served in Southeast Asia since 1993. They've mentored many national workers. There's been many people that have come to Christ through the ministry that they've done there, hundreds. And so again, they should be commended too for their work and their faithfulness to the cause of Christ in Southeast Asia. All right, thanks.
All right, got a little bit of news from Adult Ministries. We're counting, I'm not sure how many more than 80, but definitely 80 adults baptized so far this year in 2011. There's others, but we haven't been able to gather all of the statistics here. One thing that's striking to me, a lot of times in adult baptisms, you'll have people who, you know, they received Christ years ago and then they didn't walk with God or whatever, and now they're walking with God, which is, and getting baptized, which is great. But the vast, vast majority of these baptisms are people who've been converted within the last year or so. So that is good. Little highlights. Scott Arnold reports that the West Side ministry over there in the bottom has baptized 24 people this summer. And he said the coolest thing to him was that over a third of them are what he would call former God haters. People who, because of the stuff that happened to them growing up, all the adversity, all of the suffering, came to hate God, convinced that God, you know, God just didn't care about them, God was against them. And he said to hear those folks talk about how they discovered that God is a God of love and forgiveness and how His love has transformed their lives, that was the highlight for him. In the 4th Street sphere, we saw 29 baptisms. And what was striking to me there again was the tremendous diversity, social diversity in the converts. Really only three, I think, came from a white middle class background. All the rest were urban, either African American or white, immigrants, Muslims, three converted from a Muslim background, and 17 Chinese. So that's cool. That's one of the things that we wanted to think we were praying for. And then Ryan Lowry, who couldn't be here this morning, wanted to pass along that their sphere got to baptize 12 folks this summer, and that they, it's a pretty small sphere, really. It's 125 people. They got to plant two home groups this past year, and this has been their best year of home group growth since they started a few years ago. So those are some highlights from the home group work in the adult spheres. Another thing that we have emphasized over the last 3 years is to capitalize on this opportunity to get in there next to the hundreds of international students that are flowing into Columbus every year. A lot of you are familiar with IFI. Rich Mendola, the leader of IFI, he's told me that the people from Xenos, the infusion of workers from Xenos, is having an absolutely amazing impact on the work that they're trying to do. He's so thankful because these are people who've been, you know, discipled in the context of home groups. They're grounded in the Word. They've got a heart for outreach. And the quality of workers then is being upgraded by folks, mainly from the adult ranks. 313 Xenos workers in IFI from zero about 2.5 years ago. These are people who serve on a regular basis in a variety of capacities. 44 of them still need to get their training. They have to do some training before they get involved. All the rest are in active service there. You know, the Chinese, people keep saying it's just the time for the Chinese. Several years ago, the Falara Home Group, a long time ago, got into working with the Chinese graduate students and have had a fruitful ministry there. For whatever reasons, it's their time. And I don't know, we cannot get numbers on the number of Chinese students that we've seen convert over the last couple of years, but it's in the dozens and dozens just through the Xenos home groups, both college and adult, reaching out to these students through ministry teams like the Hurls ministry team that was started to reach out to Chinese students, and the Wolf ministry team, and just individuals. I don't know, like I said, of our spheres baptism, 17 of them were Chinese students. It's pretty amazing. And then another thing that we've really focused on in the last couple of years is adorning the gospel. How can we mobilize to serve in various capacities out in our community, whether it's in public schools, nursing homes, food pantries, medical clinics, etc.? How can we go out there in the name of Christ, contribute to the community in the name of Christ, position ourselves so that we now have a presence and a credibility in whole groups of people that we would otherwise not know, and give the credit to Christ. That's been a big emphasis for the last two and a half years. And 37% of adult home group members over 1,000 serve at least monthly outside mainstream Xenos ministries. In other words, this number would include the workers for Renegade. It would include the workers that are involved in IFI in terms of picking up students from the airport, etc. But it also includes a lot of people serving, like I said, at public schools, hospitals, nursing homes, clinics, food pantries, all over the city in the name of Christ. And I know that this is having an impact, not only because I hear of stories of people being able to share their faith and people coming out to Bible studies who were met in that context, but I also know that it's enhancing the reputation of Christ and of this church in a way that will have a leavening effect for good in the years to come. So yeah, and like I said, lots of evangelism happening in this context. Not simply doing good, but doing good and talking about Christ. So that's what I got. And I know there's a whole lot of other stuff that in each of these areas that we shared this morning, a lot of significant ministry and fruitful ministry that we did not cover. These are just the highlights, but I think the point is, again, the Lord is doing some amazing work through this church as we sit here. We got our problems. We know we got our problems, and some of us are in areas where we're confronted with really big challenges, and we have to address those challenges and win through to victory in the places where we are, but we need to be encouraged about the overall picture. So what I want to do is just pick it up on Ruth's teaching. Let's bring some power to bear right now, some prayer power to bear, and to pray thanking God for what he's doing here. And what I want us to do is to break up into smaller groups, say no more than about 8 or 10. You can move the chairs. Break up into circles, and I want you to pray as you pray in those groups for 10 or 15 minutes. I want you to pray, especially thanking God for what you learned about today that's really not directly connected to what you're doing. And as you pray for some of these prayer requests that you heard today, pray especially for the ones that you're not directly connected to. So let's do it. Just break up into groups. We'll go for 15 minutes.
This study was recorded at Xenos Christian Fellowship and is copyrighted. You may freely copy and distribute it as long as you keep it intact and do not sell it.